I have had a lot go on in my life, and I'll try to summarize the portion relevant to today's episode. In 2007, we moved to Singapore. In 2008, I had my youngest, Zoe, got and recovered ish from a mosquito illness called chikungunya that led to an autoimmune disorder diagnosis by a rheumatologist in 2012. I underwent multiple surgeries in 2014, hip arthroscopy and a tummy tuck diastasis recti repair, often known as a mummy hernia, and total hip replacements in 2015 and 2017. Bear with me, I promise you this all ties in at the end. Circling back to the tummy tuck, which I prefer not to call it that because it really degrades the issues surrounding why women get them. Thus, the diastasis recti repair. Note that all of my doctors refer to it as a mummy hernia. A diastasis recti is often caused from having large babies, multiple births, or gaining a significant amount of weight. What happens is your muscle wall separates. Different degrees will have different levels of needs and complexities. One complexity is dealing with a permanent-looking bloated belly, or when you have your period, you deal with looking very pregnant. The human populace needs to grasp that women's bodies do not look like a 4x4 flatboard. Okay, wait, that's a square. I guess like a 4x8. Okay, like whatever. Anyway, honestly, being asked every 28 days if I was pregnant was so fucking exhausting. I started to come back with, no, I have my period. I bloat so badly and bleed like someone just sacrificed a fucking pig. Here's a brief lesson in manners, and women are guilty of this too. If a woman's water breaks in front of you, that's the opportunity to say, oh my God, you're having a baby? Otherwise, don't assume and shut the fuck up. I don't care if she waddles and rubs her belly. Maybe she's a Teletubby out of costume. Anyway, my GP diagnosed my diastasis recti after I expressed frustration about looking pregnant every 28 days. I tried reformer Pilates to address it. Surgery became necessary due to the remaining separation of my muscle wall. The wall is what protects your vital organs. So simply, if it is separated, it's not protecting your organs. Now, let's say you get into a car accident, your steering wheel smashes into your stomach, and there's a good chance that you could cause severe damage to an important organ that could end up costing you your life. This is how my GP explained it to me. Well, we were still living in Singapore at the time, and the medical system there is vastly different than that of Canada's. We had medical insurance through my husband's company, and when you have a big ticket item, you have to take a quote from your doctor to your insurance company for approval. Now, as a hairstylist, I've had many clients over the years share that they have had the diastasis recti repair, and I would say 50% were approved for insurance and 50% were not. I was of the not. I do believe that if the surgery was recommended for men, it would be covered 100% without question, because if you're a man, we need to keep all y'all together. But if a woman requires some sort of potential life-saving surgery, she's disposable. After all, there are plenty of fish in that HR department. I came out of my surgery with the doctor gesturing about how tight he got my muscle wall with a corset stitch. 2 years later, arriving in Canada for the summer, I was lifting my luggage out of the car and suddenly buckled over with this overwhelming, tearing pain. My mind immediately went to the corset stitch. Is it unraveling? Seeking medical attention in Toronto, I was told by a male doctor within 5 minutes that I had an ulcer. No one can tell you that you have a fucking ulcer until they've done a proper upper GI endoscopy. Sidebar, I don't have an ulcer. Anyway, fast forwarding back to 2022 when we repatriated back to Canada, having dealt with increasingly annoying stress incontinence issues, I see my new GP in Toronto who tells me to work on my Kegels, which Apple, by the way, as I draft this, auto corrects it to giggles. It's not funny. Anyway, I'm like, Kegels are not my issue. I see a menopause doctor who tells me aging is one culprit and to work on my Kegels. Fucking hell, Apple correcting to giggles. Yet again, this is not fucking female hysteria. I went for a facial at a dermatology clinic who offers a complimentary trial of the Impella chair, which is a medical device that you sit on. It works by amplifying the pelvic floor muscle contractions. Think Kegels, but on steroids. I saw a doctor who does urogynecology at Sunnybrook Hospital who also mentioned this Impella chair, but added, I am not a candidate for it as it would worsen my incontinence issues since my pelvic floor muscles are too tight. I don't want to say overworked because my husband would disagree with me and my kids would be disgusted, but overworked with Kegels since almost every doctor shoves Kegels in your face. Sorry, that's kind of like an unfortunate imagery. Apologies. There are many options available for women who suffer from stress incontinence issues, which include a bulking agent injectable that sounds like Polyfill, which bulks up the urethral tissue. Or another option is using some of your abdominal tissues repurposed in surgery. But those like me who have had a diastasis recti repair may not qualify because of the scar tissue from that surgery. Anyway, there are many other options. But then you know what the doctor tells me that can add to incontinence issues? The diastasis recti repair surgery. The urogynecologist added that probably having pelvic floor physio after my surgery would have helped me lessen the chances of suffering increased stress incontinence. My journey highlights the complexities of women's health and the need for better understanding and support. But now let's further dive into that pelvic floor. We're here to spread them, and by that mean spread knowledge. Welcome to the Fuck You 50s.
Welcome to the Fuck You 50s, the podcast for women who refuse to tolerate the bullshit anymore. This is real talk, real stories, and a long overdue reality check. I'm your host, Andrea Clare, and this podcast is the filter-free voice you've been waiting for, with a dose of F-bombs. The Fuck You 50s, unfiltered, unapologetic, and undeniably needed. My guest today is Tamara Gurdas, who is a pelvic health physiotherapist and the co-founder of, very cleverly named, Physio Down Under, Singapore's first pelvic health physiotherapy clinic. Tamara has over 20 years of physio experience and a master's in continence and pelvic health physiotherapy. While I was living in Singapore, Tamara became a common topic with my private hairstyling clients who had shared their own pelvic floor issues with me. Well, in the vein of your new oversharing BFF, I too went to see Tamara, seeking help of my own what the fuck is happening to my body when I sneeze, cough, or try to jump for any amount of joy situation. I thought Tamara would be a perfect addition to the Fuck You 50s conversation roster. She says this, just because it's common doesn't mean it's normal. Let's hear all of the gems that she has to say. Welcome, Tamara.
Hello.
How are you, Andrea? Nice to see you.
Yes, nice to see you too. You get a different angle of me now.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I'm well. Like, I'm freezing in Canada. You know, we've been back in Toronto for 2 years now, so I definitely miss like the Singapore heat for sure. Although you guys are probably in rainy season right now, right?
A little, yes, it has been raining a lot, but I've got the aircon pumping in here, and it's all hot as always. Yeah,
it is what it is. Oh, amazing. Well, thank you so much for doing this. I really, really appreciate it. So I remember like in Singapore, because I would work on set doing photo shoots, but I also had private clients that I would see. I had like a one chair salon set up at our house on Zender Road. And I had so many clients that were coming to me that were also either seeing you or heard of you, or also maybe not even, but just, you know, as you talk to your hairstylist about, you know, various things. And I'm like an open book. And so it's interesting too, because, you know, I've had three children, as you know, and I was just developing problems with my pelvic floor. And it's like, you know, things like I used to work out, but I had to kind of stop working out because every time I would try to do some sort of exercise, I would practically wet my pants, you know, which is embarrassing. And it's like, and then you just stop doing things in life because, you know, you have that kind of thought like, this is going to happen to me, so I'm going to stop doing this, right? And so I had clients that were talking about you and just said, go see Tamara, and you have to go with an open mind and don't be shy. And I just think there's so many women that have kind of these issues, right? For various reasons, you know, whatever. So Tamara, just so I'm not like monopolizing this whole conversation, because I want to hear from you. If we can maybe start with, how did you get into it? What kind of motivated you to get into pelvic floor physio?
I graduated as a physio in 1999, and I moved to the UK, and I was working for the NHS, and it was terrible. There was a 9-month waiting list. I was a newly qualified physio. By the time I saw anybody, their pain was chronic. And occasionally we would have pregnant women coming through and they would get triaged quickly. And I just loved it. They got better. Moved to Australia, got a job at the Royal Hospital for Women in Sydney, and I got trained up there and I was like, right, this is it. And so that was in 2004. So for over 20 years now, I've been specialized in pelvic health. I've gone on to do my master's in pelvic health physiotherapy. And it's very, very fulfilling. I'm an A-type personality, so I like to be really good at what I do. And so to be a physio and be excellent at every joint in the body is impossible to stay up to date with everything. But for pelvic health, I can really stay up to date with there's enough to keep me interested, but it's small enough that I can be really good and really know what's going on. So it's great. I've never looked back.
Amazing. I would guess that there's probably a lot of new things. I don't want to jump ahead, I recently heard about this Umsala chair. Is it new technology?
Yeah, look, it's been around for a number of years. I think people are always looking for a quick fix. Right. And the reality is, if you come to see a pelvic health physio, you are almost always going to leave with a little bit of homework. And also, we're probably going to ask you to get undressed, and we're probably going to do a vaginal examination if you are comfortable with that. And a lot of people don't want to do that. Now, an Umsala chair uses high FEM electromagnetic technology, and they sell it as you can be fully clothed, you sit on this chair for 28 minutes, you can read your book, you can have a cup of tea, and you're going to be cured. The problem is that the research is still very spotty. And I've tried one of these. I've sat on one at a conference, and it does 11,000 pelvic floor contractions in 28 minutes. Now, that's a lot of pelvic floor contractions. And a lot of women don't have weak pelvic floor. Well, they do have weak pelvic floors, but they've got overactive pelvic floor. So the tone in their muscles is actually too much. And because of that, they can't activate and they can't release, which actually causes a lot of problems. And so if you go sit on this chair and you've got overactive pelvic floor muscles, you're going to make all your symptoms worse.
Oh.
There's a small group of women who truly would benefit. And actually, when I sat on it, I really felt it was only working my superficial pelvic floor muscles. So there's three layers of pelvic floor muscles, and the superficial ones are more towards the outside. So if you can be assessed by a pelvic health physio or your gynae and you know what you need, and then they prescribe the chair, that's fine. The other problem is it's super expensive. Yes, so that's my take on it. So I'm not saying it's terrible for everybody, but I'd say really know what's going on with your own body before you go and sit on one.
I guess in a way, then it's kind of almost like you're saying, like you get your doctor to kind of prescribe it, so it becomes like an outside physio tool. I'm still having like pelvic floor issues. And I know because when I saw you, I only saw you a couple of times, and then we were getting ready to move to Canada. So I've always done like the Kegels and, you know, whatever. But I remember seeing you and you were saying like if I remember correctly, is that my muscles weren't necessarily my issue.
When we talk about urinary incontinence, we get two different types of urinary incontinence. So you have stress urinary incontinence, which happens when you leak urine. If you cough, sneeze, jump, run, it's like we create too much pressure in our abdomen, and that pressure causes us to leak. But you also get what's called urge urinary incontinence, and that is where your bladder is overactive. So it's, women will describe this as, you know, they see the toilet, and as soon as they see the toilet, they start to pee. Like their bladder just gets totally overactive. I mean, the other times, sometimes it's like running water, or they get cold, and it causes the bladder to get excited, and they start to leak. So you can have what's called mixed urinary incontinence, which is a combination of the two. But we treat stress incontinence and urge urinary incontinence quite differently. So if you ever go see a pelvic health physio, so like when you came to me, you'll remember that we spent a good 15 to 20 minutes actually having a chat in the beginning where I asked you lots of detailed questions exactly about peeing. We spoke about pooing. I showed you the Bristol stool chart. You identified which poo is usually yours. We spoke about, you know, is there any pain during sex? We spoke about prolapse symptoms like heaviness in the vagina. So we really get a good understanding of exactly what's going on. So if I look at you, you were having a combination of the two. So you were having a little bit of the stress incontinence and the urge. But your pelvic floor, it wasn't that it was super weak. It was kind of average strength, but you couldn't relax. So it was on the higher tone side. And pelvic floor muscles are meant to be dynamic muscles. So they're meant to be able to switch on and switch off when we need them. And I always describe this to my patients. Imagine your biceps muscle was constantly in a contracted state. You can imagine that over time, those biceps are going to get shorter and tight. So if then you want to use your arm, those muscles are like, oh no, hold on a second. I actually can't do what you need me to do. And the pelvic floor is exactly the same. So we needed you, for you, it wasn't so much about the strengthening in the beginning. We needed to teach your muscles to relax. We sometimes call that down training, get back that coordination of those muscles and then get them to strengthen. Pelvic floor physio is now very different to what it was like when I first started. So there's just so much else that we can do. But with you, the main thing would have been actually to get those pelvic floor muscles just to let go a little bit. The other thing is, because of how close the pelvic floor muscles and the bladder actually sit, is that if we have very sort of tight pelvic floor muscles, the muscles themselves can irritate the bladder. So that in itself can add to the urgency and the urgent continence.
Right. I remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember you telling me too that I'm probably of that age category where we're always, when we were younger, always told like, stand up straight, suck in your gut, and it trains your muscles. So you have a hard time kind of like letting go, relaxing them, because you're, you know, from a young age, you're always told like, pull your belly in, suck it in.
Yeah. So the problem with that is that the diaphragm, which is the dome-shaped muscle that sits under our rib cage. So your diaphragm, sort of when we breathe in, our lungs expand, the diaphragm descends. That in turn sort of is meant to push on the intestines and the pelvic floor. So when we breathe in, when we inhale, our pelvic floor is actually meant to lengthen. When we exhale, everything naturally recoils and our pelvic floor is meant to lift, right? But if I walk around all day sucking my belly in, I cannot, like if you try now to pull your belly in and now try to breathe into your belly, you won't be able to. You will only be able to do an upper chest breath. Now your upper chest breathing is like our fight or flight breathing. It's like a lion's chasing me. That's what I mean to use. But so many women want to have flat tummies that they suck their bellies in all the time and they lose this ability to actually use their diaphragm to breathe. And I cannot tell you the number of women who come in and one of the first things that I do is I look at their abdomens, I look at how they're breathing, and the number of them who cannot let go of their tummies. And if I say to them, you've got to let go, and they hate it, they hate that feeling. But if you walk around sucking in your belly, your pelvic floor cannot work automatically. It loses its automatic up and down that we want. The pelvic floor is part of our core muscles, it's part of our postural muscles. Most of the time, we shouldn't have to think about it. I often talk to my patients, like imagine a young girl on a trampoline. She's not leaking urine. And she's not thinking about her pelvic floor. And that's because the coordination between her diaphragm and her pelvic floor is still perfect. But I often think as we become, you know, we go into teenage years and especially when we fall pregnant and we start to suck in, then we lose that ability. And so that's part of what we do. We do breathing exercises. We teach women how to breathe again.
Wow, that's amazing. And I have to say, like, as we're having this part of the conversation, I'm realizing that I'm still in that bad old habit. Like I'm standing here sucking in my gut going, ugh. Yeah. And I'm not even trying to make a joke. Like I can feel it. And sometimes my mind goes back to our initial like discussions and I remind myself like I need to get out of this habit. It's such a hard habit to kick.
It is, but you are not alone. I do find though that it's very difficult in the beginning, but once you get it, because it's physiologically normal, your brain does it quite easily after that.
I don't know if it's gotten like worse for me, and I've talked to like other like people around my age as well, but in Canada, and I think they're available in Singapore as well, or there's these underwear called Knicks, right? They're like period underwear. So sometimes when I'm going to set, if I have a long day on a TV commercial or something, I literally will wear those Knicks underwear just in case, like if I'm like in a dusty studio and I sneeze and like leak a bit of urine or something, like it's so frustrating. And talking to people, like people don't really want to talk about it because they find it embarrassing. But then it's like when you're one-on-one with a friend or a hairstylist or whatever, people kind of like open up a bit more. And I've told people like you need to find a pelvic floor physio where do you see, like, is it kind of like all ages that this can affect? Do you find it more so as women are getting older? Do you find it more so like women post children? Like what's, I guess, the root of this evil?
So look, we definitely, as we get older, the prevalence of pelvic floor dysfunction, so whether that's incontinence or prolapse, it definitely increases as we get older. And there's no doubt about it that hormonal changes that we go through first in perimenopause and then in menopause plays a role in that. However, I absolutely do see teenagers who are leaking urine, and it's usually the athletes. And it's so ironic, right? Because you would think it's the athletes who are so super strong, but it's often the athletes, and it's often like the gymnasts or sort of the sports that are very, very high impact. They have the tighter pelvic floors, and they've never been taught how to let go. If you look at studies where they look at CrossFitters, look, it's often things like double unders, which is where they're skipping, and they have to do two turns of the skipping rope in one jump, right? Or things like box jumps. So very high impact. But many, many, many women, before they even fall pregnant, are having difficulties with controlling their bladders. And often the way they handle it is they just stop doing that sport, which is so sad. But the average rate is about at least 30% of all women will be experiencing urinary incontinence at some time in their life. But really, once we get beyond menopause, the rate is closer to 50%. You know, we're trying to talk about it more and more. I think one of the biggest issues is that the previous generations used to say it was normal. The biggest message I want to give to your listeners is that it's not normal. It's common, but it's not normal. And there's always something you can do about it. And even if we can't cure it, there's usually something we can do to help. We can usually take the whatever you want to do, make modifications, and allow you to continue working, doing whatever you want.
So when people come to see you, like, I know it's like they really have to kind of leave their embarrassment at the door, so to speak.
Look, I think you're right. I think the vast majority of women know what they're coming for and they know what to expect. I do occasionally have women who didn't know that the gold standard way to assess your pelvic floor is through a vaginal exam. I mean, I can't look at anybody externally and know what they're doing with their pelvic floor. I would say 99% of my patients are always okay to have a vaginal exam. And I do a lot of explaining. You know, I've got my pelvic floor model, you know, I bring that out, I explain, you know, why we're doing it, what I'm looking at. I mean, often I do a vaginal examination in standing as well, because if a woman's got prolapse and she's lying on her back, the organs sit very nicely in the pelvis. So, for example, a woman will be symptomatic. Like, she'll say to me, I can feel this heaviness, but I went to my gynae and my gynae examined me and said there was nothing there. And I'll go, okay, did the gynae look at you in lying or standing? Always in lying. And then I get them into standing, and because gravity pulls everything down, all of a sudden you see this bulge sitting there at the vagina, and it validates it for them, right? So I always joke and I say, listen, I want to examine you in standing. It's really not the most glamorous way for me to do an examination, but it's really useful for me. And I explain that to them, and they always say, absolutely, let's do it. Yes, look, we don't force anyone to do anything they don't want to do, but people are coming because they've got an issue and they want to get better, or we get a lot of women who've just had babies, and more now they want to check what's going on with their abdominal muscles, with their pelvic floor, before they go back to exercise, which is so fantastic. Most women who've had a baby are like, where do you want me? Like, you want my leg up? Yeah, like, you know, you know, it's actually more my younger patients, because we see a lot of patients who have pain during sex. Actually, the new term for it is called genitopelvic pain penetration disorder, but it's pain during sex, right? And so I have a lot of patients who have never been able to have sex, right? And so those women are definitely more conservative, and obviously we go much slower with the sessions.
Right. Do you find, because it's also interesting that you're seeing a lot of like younger moms that are coming in. Do you work with a lot of, I would assume that you do, but do you work with a lot of OBs and gynecologists, and are they starting to recommend that that's just like like postpartum, like you go see a pelvic floor specialist or physio, sorry?
It's very variable. You do have the obstetricians who are very good that way. But actually a lot, you know, social media has been really quite amazing. I mean, positive in many ways, not positive in some ways, but in spreading the word that this is what should be done. Actually, we're encouraging them to get their pelvic floors checked before, during pregnancy, because if we get a baseline during pregnancy, it's so much easier postnatally to, because they know exactly what they need to do. Also, we now have a lot of evidence that there's so much that we can do to help with their labor and delivery in terms of minimizing pelvic floor issues postnatally. So that's also what we're pushing as well. But we have a lot of doulas as well who refer a lot to us. And but yes, absolutely the obstetricians. But the obstetricians tend to only refer if there's a problem.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So then they would refer, whereas a lot of women are finding us, even if they don't have a problem, they'll just say, look, I'm 6 weeks postnatal. I heard this is what I should do and I'm here. Right.
Honestly, I feel like that's amazing. Like moving forward that, I mean, what I find, of course, being a woman, you know, women's health, I find we're so like backseat to so many things, right? Like, and recently I've been, you know, because I had an autoimmune disorder in Singapore and I'm trying to kind of like see new doctors and stuff here. And honestly, like I've been back for 2 years and it's still hard to kind of get any answers. But one of the things that started spiking for me in Singapore was high blood pressure. And so I went to see a hypertension specialist here, like long story short, because then we're not talking about hypertension, but as a male doctor, I told my GP, I really prefer female doctors now. I just don't have the patience for male doctors. Maybe it's partly my age. So I guess they accidentally referred me to this male doctor. And then he, such a jackass, and was so condescending. And he also said to me that basically I was going to be on this hypertension medication for the rest of my life. And he wanted to put me on two other medications. Just, this was in 15 minutes of seeing him for my appointment. And I said to him, you know, I'm 53, I'm in like perimenopause, menopause, and I've read in Dr. Jen Gunter's book that sometimes hypertension can be a menopause thing. And that once you're finished menopause, your hypertension kind of disappears. And he said, I don't know who Dr. Jen Gunter is, and I know nothing about hypertension in women. All I know is that you're going to have a heart attack within 10 years if you don't take this medication, is what he said to me. And I canceled the rest of my appointments with him because it's like, I feel like in situations like this or opportunities like this where we're kind of learning and just understanding that medicine for women shouldn't be only when there's a problem. You know, I love this this idea of we get referred to seeing a pelvic floor specialist. You know, even probably if you're thinking about having children, I would guess it's probably a good opportunity for someone to see you, even to get the baseline before you're pregnant.
Absolutely. Actually, I'll go one better, actually, because so many of our patients will say to us, why did nobody tell me? Like, why did I not know about this? Something as simple as good bladder habits, right? As simple as, you know, if you think back to when you were a child and you were going to leave the house and your mother would say to you, go to the toilet, and you go, no, I don't need to pee. And your mother says, yeah, but I don't feel like taking you when we go out, so just go now. And that starts to set up like bad bladder habits, which is going to the toilet when you don't need to pee, right? So you should only pee when you have the urge. But something as simple as that. So Monica, who's my business partner, and myself, we've started going into the schools in Singapore, and we talk to anywhere between the 15 to 17-year-olds, the boys and the girls, and we are educating them on good bladder habits, on good bowel habits, what is your pelvic floor, and we're talking about periods as well, because it takes on average about 7 years for a girl to be diagnosed with endometriosis, and so we're talking about like what's normal in terms of pain and not. So we are trying to get in there as early as possible, and I know a lot of them sit there and they giggle and they think it's funny, you know, we put up the poo chart and it's all so funny, but for those kids who are having issues, they're going to take away something from that. And that's going to make a difference, because we're really trying to change the dialogue. And because I totally agree with you, is that we shouldn't be only looking for help when we've got a problem. We should be taking control of our bodies way earlier.
Yeah, amazing. So much great information. So there is help for us. We could maybe go back to our trampoline days.
Yeah, look, it's never too late to get help. Never. I think, trampolining is tough for pelvic floor. It's probably one of the things that is difficult to get back to completely, but we can manage it. If you try to trampoline in a slight forward lean position, like as if you were in a ski jump position, as opposed to throwing yourself back, you're potentially going to have less leaking because in that forward lean position, your pelvic floor can activate much better, much more effectively than if you're leaning back. But if you came back to see me, Andrea, and you say to me tomorrow, my goal is to go to a trampoline park, that is what I want to do, that is exactly what we would work towards, right? I would never say to you, no, it's not possible. And also, there are devices that can go inside the vagina and they help to give support to the urethra, which is the tube where the urine comes out, and the bladder neck. And actually, so some women listening to this, they might say, just think about it. When you wear a tampon, do you have less leaking than when you're wearing a tampon than not? Because a tampon can provide a little bit of support to the urethra and the bladder neck. And you get these devices that are designed to go inside the vagina and give that support. And for some women, they have zero leaking when they wear that. Now, it's not a cure, right? But it may allow you to go onto a trampoline without worrying about leaking.
So, and I'm sure this is not a good thing to do, but I have had a couple friends tell me that when they have something to do or they have exercise, they actually put in a tampon, even though they don't have their period.
Look, it's not designed for that. And I do have patients who do a similar thing. But if they tell me they have figured it out themselves, that it's working, I will direct them to the devices that are made out of silicone and designed specially for that purpose. I use the tampon, I call it the tampon test. So I will do it in my clinic. We have a little trampoline and I will get them to trampoline with and without a tampon. And we see if it makes a difference. So I know if the device is going to work or not. But yes, women are incredible at figuring out ways around this. So if we can get support to that urethra and bladder neck, and you know you're not going to leak, everything's going to be much better. You're going to breathe better. We're going to help to retrain that movement of the pelvic floor. So I would much rather do that than women are running or doing exercise and they're bracing and actually doing it all incorrectly. And it's not what we want.
Oh. I there's so much of this information that I'm like banking for myself. I'm like, okay, note this, note that. Tamara, if we can maybe just like circle back just to about the standing, what's the word I'm looking for?
Exam.
Yeah. So for the standing exam. So again, what are you looking? You're looking for prolapse. What exactly is prolapse?
Okay, so I'm going to show a little image, and I know some of your listeners won't be able to see this right now.
I'll post this on my Instagram account.
Okay, so this is a sideways picture of the pelvis. So you've got your pubic bone in the front, and that's your coccyx or your tailbone at the back. Those are your pelvic floor muscles like a hammock that go like that. That is the bladder with the urethra, the uterus with the vagina, and that's the rectum coming down to the anus. Now, those organs, yes, they are supported by the pelvic floor underneath, but actually inside we have what's called connective tissue or fascia, which is a really strong membranous structure that's actually holding those organs up. Sometimes with pregnancy, sometimes with vaginal delivery, sometimes with chronic constipation. So every time we go to the toilet, we're pushing and straining for 20 minutes. Sometimes women who have jobs that involve lots and lots of heavy lifting, like for nurses, like 30 years ago when they used to do lots of heavy lifting, that connective tissue can either be stretched and sometimes it can actually be damaged. And so, for example, if the connective tissue that's supporting the bladder is stretched or damaged, the bladder loses some of its support and it drops onto the vaginal wall. Now, the vagina is completely elastic. The vagina is not made out of concrete. It's completely elastic, right? And so all that happens is the vagina molds into the shape of the bladder. And what women will notice is a lump or bulge coming out of the vagina. Now, it's not actually the bladder that they can see. They can see the wall of the vagina, but the bladder's on top of it. Now, there's nothing wrong with the bladder, right? There's nothing wrong with it. It's just the support of it. Now, we can have the prolapse of the bladder, the uterus, or the rectum, and you can have one, two, or three in combination. the definition of prolapse has actually changed in the last couple of years. It used to be very much based on what we saw. So if you went to your gynae, and depending on where the organ was sitting, you would get given a stage and you were told you've got prolapse. And it's incredibly terrifying. If you go and Google prolapse, Dr. Google, you will think your life is over. You will think that is it. I can never run again. I can never lift my children or my grandchildren. That's it. I can't do anything. It's incredibly, incredibly scary. But the thing with prolapse is that it's all about symptoms. So I can see a woman where her front wall of the vagina is sitting outside of her vagina. The front wall of the vagina is sitting outside of her vagina. And she's not even aware that she's got it. Like, she cannot, doesn't even know that it's there. She doesn't actually have a prolapse because she's not aware of it, right? Objectively, she does, yes. Anatomically, she does. But really, she doesn't. But sometimes we get women where they've got very minor prolapses and they're very aware of it. And it's often when we go through menopause and our estrogen drops off and our vaginas become dry, they become atrophic is what we call them. And everything becomes a lot more sensitive. And we get that in our postnatal woman as well, because when we breastfeed, our estrogen levels are very low. We don't have periods, estrogen levels are low, and our vaginas become very sensitive. So, for example, if a woman comes to me and she's fairly early postnatal and I assess her and I can see there's some movement there, which is normal, right? I will then see, is she symptomatic? But I also want to know what exercise she wants to go back to doing. Because if she's just going to go back to Pilates and yoga, which is great, but it's low impact, I'm less worried than if she says to me, I am going back to CrossFit at 3 months postnatal, and that is what I'm doing. Or my goal is to run a marathon in 6 months' time. So with those women, I don't want to stop them. And so what I can do is we can fit something called a vaginal support pessary. So I'm showing these now. So there's different types. This is called a ring pessary with support, and it folds. This is called a Gellhorn pessary, and this is called a Q pessary. And we actually get loads and loads of different pessaries. These are made out of silicone. And these get measured and fitted, and it goes inside your vagina. And I describe it as a sports bra for your organs, right? So it goes in and it just holds everything up. Now, it doesn't sit like that. It sits at an angle. And now what's so funny is that my patients will see this and they'll go, oh, that's huge. And I'll go, oh, this is a small one. So it sits at an angle. It sits behind the pubic bone like that. And it goes up inside the vagina. And you know what the amazing thing is? You can't feel it. And it's amazing. It can allow a woman to go back to doing all sorts of different things. It doesn't necessarily help leaking of urine. Okay. So there's different ones for leaking of urine.
So that's more like support for the prolapse.
This is support for the prolapse.
Okay.
Which yeah. is just fantastic.
And again, to my listeners, sorry, I just want to say to the listeners, I'm going to go to the Fuck You 50s Instagram account, because you can find, I'll have this video there. Sorry.
And so what's amazing about these is that pessaries traditionally were only fitted by gynecologists. And they were only fitted in elderly postmenopausal women who were no longer sexually active. So they weren't good surgical candidates. And it was put inside and they said, right, I'll see you in 6 months' time. Leave it alone. Don't touch it. See you in 6 months. But that's not a good option for our younger patients, right?
Yeah.
So it's been about maybe 10 years now that we've started teaching women how to manage them themselves. So we teach women how to insert it. They remove it. That means they can have sex when they want. They can use it. Sometimes my patients only use it for exercise. Put it in before they exercise and they take it out. And it's completely changed our options for women who have symptomatic prolapse or are at high risk. And so high risk is also genetic.
Right.
So we always ask our patients any family history. So mother, sister, aunt, who have either incontinental prolapse, because what's coming up more strongly in the research is this genetic link. And it seems to be the type of collagen that we have. So we all have collagen. But we have these different types of collagen. And some of us have more type of a collagen that can stretch and come back. And some of us have more type of a collagen that kind of stretches and then that's it. It can't come back, it can't go out, it's just done. So it seems to be quite genetic that. So if I have a patient who says to me, oh, my grandmother had prolapse, my mother had prolapse, I'm saying to her, look, even if I can't see anything, we are going to treat you completely preventatively because we know that you've got this genetic link.
Wow, that's really interesting. I didn't know that either. So I'm curious too, when you were talking about like some women where when you examine them and you can see that they have like prolapse, but they don't notice it, would you still recommend that they treat it then? Like if they're not noticing it, you're like, okay, or?
You know, it depends. You know, one of the options when you look at the research for prolapse is watch and wait. Like literally that is one of the treatment options. So it doesn't mean that everybody's going to get worse necessarily, right? So I think it depends. I mean, the reality is that once your bladder is dropping beyond the entrance of the vagina, you're usually having some voiding dysfunction. So voiding is peeing. And then if it's the back wall that's dropping, so if it's the rectum, it's so interesting because my patients will say to me that they can't initiate a bowel motion very well, or they don't feel fully empty because what happens is the rectum will drop onto the vagina. And so when the poo comes down and it's meant to come out the anus, instead it gets stuck in this over here. I had a patient, she used to call it her holding bay. So the poo used to get stuck in her holding bay over there. So we actually teach these women to do what we call splinting. So they can either splint outside and lift, but actually more effective is a vaginal splinting where they put a thumb into the vagina and they push the rectum up before they poo to allow it to straighten out. And sometimes when I do my subject assessment, when I'm talking to them, when we're talking about pooing, they will say that have figured out that they actually have to do that in order to empty. And I know before I even look at them, they are going to have a posterior vaginal wall prolapse. It used to be called a rectocele.
It's so crazy how women are so adaptable and like figuring things out. And it's also unfortunate.
Yeah. But they just do it. They just end up doing it. And, yeah. And nobody would have ever asked them that, right? And they almost get like a little bit embarrassed. And then I'm like, well, you know, this is what there's actually a device. It's called the FemEase that's been developed specifically for this. I describe it as a shoehorn for the vagina. And we have some in the clinic and I will take it out and I'll show it to them and I'll go, there are so many women who are experiencing this that they have created something specifically for this, right? So just to kind of say to them, you're not the only woman in the world that is having this, right?
Yeah, I guess that definitely is one thing. One way to look at it is like when there's tools that are being developed for this, you are definitely not alone.
No.
You know? But, I mean, it's great. It's great that there's all this like technology and research and development out there.
It's a hugely growing area. It's amazing. It's actually, I mean, to keep up with the research is quite something else at the moment. And when I first started in the field, I mean, we barely had anything. And now it's really taken off, which is just fantastic. And there's some really smart people doing some good research out there.
Who do you think, is there any kind of like one country or a couple countries where you're like, they're the ones?
Australia's brilliant. They've got really strong pelvic health training there, and they've got two options for a master's program in pelvic health physiotherapy. So there are like, almost every single physiotherapy clinic will have a pelvic health physiotherapist working there, and you know they're going to be trained at a good level.
If someone is not available to go to Singapore to see you, and if they're looking for like a pelvic floor physio, I guess some of it would be referrals from their doctors, but other countries don't have that opportunity. Like what would your recommendation would be aside from like looking at their resume? Like how would you know that you're going to a good pelvic floor physio?
Look, it's tricky. I mean, it's looking at their bios. Look, they're definitely good pelvic health physios in Canada. Actually, one of our physios who used to work for us returned back to Canada. So I know she is.
Is she in Toronto?
She's in Vancouver, but I can check for you. But she's great. And I know, so she's there. And I know she's working at a clinic where they've got, I think, multiple clinics. They do have definitely in the UK and America. The issue is that it's much more spread out. So, you know, you remember how small Singapore is. It's so easy. Like I'll get people traveling from the East Coast to come and see us, you know, whereas I think in Canada, like you're not really going to travel these massive distances, right, to go see somebody. There are different sites where you can look up like who are trained pelvic floor physios, but I think it's often like if they've done that company's training.
Right.
Like I'm on different international Facebook groups. So if I have patients who are moving overseas, I will often then do a search and then I will look at the bios and then I will kind of go, okay, this is somebody, or I will ask on the forum and go, look, I've got a patient moving here. Does anyone recommend a pelvic health physio?
Not that hair is the same thing, but I was doing that too. And I would have clients leaving Singapore to another country and they were like devastated about having to find a hairstylist. Again, not the same. I'm not comparing physio medical to like hair, but, and then when I was leaving, I was also looking up hairstylists in Singapore to recommend people too. It's a, like you get really attached to your clients, patients. So, and you want to, you know, make sure that they're.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you want people to have like the best treatment, right? And you want them to continue that care. Like it's important.
I started seeing a menopause specialist doctor and one of my clients from Singapore, who's Australian, who lives back in Australia. I had ranted, I think it was about that hypertension doctor on my Facebook page. I ranted about my experience with him. And then she messaged me and said, you need to go and see a menopause specialist. And I was like, it's hard to get them here. And I mean, I know that there are menopause doctors that are available, but it's like a 6-month waiting list. But then I apparently, because Canada is mainly public health, right? But there's a little like private clinics that are popping up now, and menopause seems to be one of them, which I find kind of interesting. That's what the government is choosing that we should pay for, which again is fine. I'm happy to pay for it. Anyway, sorry, this is a long way of getting to. So I had this appointment with this menopause doctor, and I was telling her about you and your clinic, and she just thought it was not only fantastic that you have this, but also love the name Physio Down Under, right? Which you could easily franchise as well, right? Because not only, because you're Australian, right, Tamara?
I'm actually South African, but I lived in Australia and my children were born in Australia.
Yeah, but it has so many meanings. Like it can be Australia, but it's also can be.
I know, exactly.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much. I feel like we're, is there anything else that you want to, I know that you did, like you wanted to kind of express too that there's no time limit to pelvic floor physio, that any time is a good time.
Absolutely. Any time is a good time. It's never too late. Yeah, often the treating the elderly woman is actually just so rewarding, because they actually just do so well because no one's ever shown them any of this before, and they take it on board and they've got more time in their lives often, and they can do it. Often with the, you know, the postnatal woman, it's tough, you know, they've got the babies and they're learning to breastfeed and, you know, baby's got tongue tie, and it's difficult to do all the stuff we ask them to do.
Yeah.
And I always say to my patients when they tell me something, or like, I've seen it all, I've heard it all, like there's really nothing. I go, please try shock me, please. Like, just go ahead.
What's the eldest age of a patient you've had?
I've probably had someone in their late 80s. Is probably, we don't look, in Singapore, we don't get a lot. It's more, I would say, we're seeing more between sort of 30 and 60 is probably the age group that we're seeing the most. But
is your clientele, would you say it's mainly expats? So do you get
changing? So when we started the clinic, it was definitely the majority of expats, because the locals didn't know that it even existed. And now it's changing. Local women are no longer accepting that their only option is surgery, or that they have to live with it, because that's what they used to get told, and they're seeking help. And so I would say we now almost 40% local, 60% expat. The other tricky thing is with insurance, because the expats all have medical insurance, whereas the locals don't often. And so then it gets a bit pricey. So, but we're definitely getting more and more local women. Also within the clinic, we have two physios now who are doing men's pelvic health. So men have pelvic floor, and so they, those two physios are treating men. And then another one is doing pediatric pelvic health. So, I mean, obviously we're not doing any internal exams with the kids.
Of course,
Also looking at that, remember I mentioned that kids can have urinary incontinence and fecal incontinence.
Yeah, I was surprised about that too when I was doing research to kind of like look up questions and things that I could ask you. And it talked about children's pelvic floor physio. And I honestly thought, does it have to do with like lack of exercise because kids aren't really getting out and running around anymore? And then, so when you were talking about it earlier and saying how it's like gymnasts, ballet dancers, like all these like high impact, you know, and I was like, oh, here I thought they were just the lazy kids playing video games.
No, but look, the little ones who are having problems, it's actually usually mainly related to constipation because the distance in a kid's body between the rectum and the bladder is much smaller because they're much smaller. So if they have a loaded rectum that's very full, that puts pressure on the bladder. And so then they start to have issues. So it's often bowel related with the little ones. Yeah.
I remember like Zoe, she'll hate that I'm going to mention this, but when she was a baby, so it's fine. When she was born with a problem with her urethra. And there was one muscle that wasn't pulsating. So the urine would get trapped. And we discovered this when she was 7 weeks old. She was diagnosed with she had a kidney infection. It was awful. It was a nightmare. I'm surprised I didn't get through. Like I still tell the story and I get all teary, you know, but then she was on medication for 2 years and they were trying to decide if they were going to do surgery or not. And I remember sometimes she would get so constipated where we'd be hitting almost like the 2 week mark. And I'd be on the phone with her pediatrician saying we need to do something. Like, this is like crazy.
Very stressful with that sort of thing. Very stressful. Yeah.
And thankfully she grew out of it. And then just one day the muscle just started pulsating.
Oh, amazing.
Amazing. Well, Tamara, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. I know it's late for you in Singapore. Wait, well, maybe if you're open, we can have you back another time. And
I can talk for hours.
Yes, me too.
Thanks for tuning in to the Fuck You 50s. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to follow and rate the podcast. And we'd love to connect with you on Instagram, so be sure to follow us at the Fuck You 50s. The Fuck You 50s is hosted by Andrea Clare and edited and produced by Bespoke Productions Hub. See you next time.